Did you have an outline of how you were going to proceed?
Certainly. I still want to design the speakers using the what we call the prompt directive.
Yes.
Right? And which we still do, and which we did, and we still do. Right? And that would have been one of our biggest impediments, because a lot of drive units these days are not very first order friendly.
DeVore Fidelity, the show partner of Not an Audiophile, the podcast. DeVore Fidelity has become one of the most acclaimed high-end companies in the world. And having heard the loudspeakers many times, I know why. They're all still handcrafted in Brooklyn, New York. We love how this iconic brand captures the excitement and breath of the sound. Nothing brings you closer to the music than DeVore Fidelity. For a retailer near you, visit DeVoreFidelity.com. We are back, Not an Audiophile, the podcast, episode 50, a half century of quality audiophile, or not an audiophile, podcast entertainment, some say. Today we speak to Kiet Lowe, a gentleman of the Australian hi-fi industry, the custodian of the Duntek loudspeaker brand for a quarter of a century, he tells us, and he gives us the lowdown on how he got hold of the brand, why, and where it's gone, how he's got it there, and the future. Hey, today we've got Kiet Lowe on the phone, and if you're wondering, well, firstly, Kiet, hello, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
Hello, how are you? Nice talking to you.
It's a pleasure. I've wanted to interview you for a long time. You're a busy man. I'm busy. We've finally gotten together. The story is kind of threefold. I'd want to talk to you about three key things today. One is, and just feel free to answer straight away, how did you end up with the famous, slightly infamous, famous Duntek brand? And when I say infamous, I'm really referring to a positive, which is the appearance on that TV program that kind of made the brand.
Absolutely correct, yeah. Let me go back a little bit. We have known each other for, goodness, years and years and years.
Yes.
As I don't know if your listeners are aware of, but our relationship originated from Orpheus Loudspeaker.
Indeed, yes.
Even at that stage, I was an audiophile already anyway. Well, I think I was an audiophile. I must be an audiophile if I was interested in Orpheus. Now, my business partner at the time was, as a lot of people probably know, Brad Serhan. And at that stage, I was already very interested in Duntek loudspeakers, but Duntek being so expensive, you could never really afford it. And I just left it as it is. I enjoyed the sound of Duntek, and there would have been a reason why. I couldn't quite work out why at that stage, but Duntek always drew me the same way Orpheus drew me. In terms of audio. And one day, many years later, I met, at this stage, John Dunleavy had already left the organization.
Okay.
And it was run by the accountant, Jim Alexander.
Okay.
James Alexander. And he tried running an audio company. Imagine an accountant running an audio company.
Well, I mean, there's actually some pretty good modern day examples of how that's gone, but and some of those takeovers.
Every instance I have heard, as soon as I mentioned an accountant running, we all sort of start laughing. I mean, there are some really famous companies that were run by audiophiles and somehow got into issues, and the accountants ended up running them.
Yes.
Anyway, back to Dantec. Anyway, Dantec was at that stage run by a company called by a person called James Alexander, which is the company which is accountant for. Let me see, Faulding Pharmaceuticals.
Okay. Yeah.
Faulding Pharmaceuticals was actually the owner of Dantec.
Okay.
John Dunleavy was the founder, and he had a very small share in Dantec.
Okay.
But the person that actually funded it was Bill Scammell. Bill Scammell.
Yeah.
Correct. Bill Scammell, the original from the family company, Faulding Pharmaceuticals.
Okay.
And Faulding's is still running, but they have gone in a different direction.
What they got out of the loudspeaker manufacturing business and back into pharmaceuticals.
yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, I got a funny story about this when I met up with James Alexander, and I said to James that I knew that Dantec was available for sale.
Yeah.
And he wanted some phenomenal amount of money.
Okay.
I mean,
and when you say phenomenal, you mean more than $1 million?
Oh, yes.
Really?
And it is not phenomenal, by the way. $1 million is not phenomenal for Dantec.
Because no,
you consider a pair of high-end speakers, right?
Yeah.
And somebody says they want $1 million, and you can say $1 million, 10 pair of speakers.
Oh, that's right. But
if the brand
was trading,
no, not necessarily. If the brand is an iconic brand,
yeah,
it's got pedigree, it has history, and the potential is there.
Well, it had all of that. So, and I guess I was just wanting to draw, $1 million is not very much, but I wanted to draw a line because I guess some examples exist where it's a famous brand, but it's not trading anymore, and the brand is sort of sitting on the shelf and becomes, to some degree, almost valueless. But that's, keep telling us the story.
People still paid a lot of money for that.
Yeah. Well, they can because they just want the brand. Yeah.
Let's take, for example, like some famous brands, Rogers.
Yes.
Celestion, right? And the Chinese still paid bucket load of money for it because the brand had history. It doesn't take them very much to relaunch it, right?
No, well, that's right. Starting a brand from scratch it's incredibly difficult.
It is incredibly difficult, and it's exactly like thanks to John Dunleavy when he started Dantec. I mean, he was having a tough time, right?
Okay.
When he was in what TV show? That was in Quantum.
The TV show was Beyond 2000.
Beyond 2000, right? I saw that. And after that show, the brand just accelerated.
Oh, it was, I think everyone saw it because it was a different time and there was only so many shows to watch. I mean, there was four channels in this country in the metropolitan areas and that was a popular show.
Yeah, people overseas have also seen it.
Yeah, okay.
Right. So from that perspective, the brand, an iconic brand of history, pedigree, is still worth a lot of money, right?
Okay.
Just think of it, $1 million, 10 pairs, 10, 12 pairs of speakers.
Yeah,
what?
Yeah.
10, 12 pairs of speakers? What? You sell 10, 12 pairs of speakers and you got your money back?
Well, that's assuming the speakers cost nothing to make. and that you sell them direct, but it's...
that's correct. Yeah, that's correct. If you sell them direct. But if you don't sell them direct, right? If you go to the wholesale retail outlet, yeah, but then your numbers are much higher.
Mm.
So it still adds up to be the same.
Well, that's exactly right. Yeah, I mean, that's we're going to a side subject, but that's what balances out. I mean, some some people think, oh, I'm going to sell direct because, you know, I'll get all the money. But, yeah, you'll sell very few pairs of loudspeakers versus putting it through retail channels, yeah.
Absolutely. For each pair that you sell, you sort of make up. But, you know, you can, you can argue till the cows come home, but which way is better? Well, there's no particular way.
No,
you know?
No.
It depends on your exposure and things like that. I have people that pay me umpteen amount of money because I've spoken to them and they've transferred the money over.
Okay. You mean to purchase a pair of speakers or to purchase your time?
To purchase a pair of this is not today, but a while ago.
Yeah, yeah.
I won't say how much, but some ridiculous amount of money for two pairs of Sovereign.
Okay.
And they're not local.
No, all right.
They're in London and in the US.
Okay. Well, it's rarefied air. It's a funny thing how, you deal very much in the true high end, and you deal directly with the consumers in many cases, which is, they're interesting people, aren't they? I mean, I guess their appreciation of what they've got monetary-wise is not what...
People have changed.
Yeah, people have changed. Well, they've got more money.
Yeah, they've got more money, but there's a lot more distractions.
Yes, yes.
Anyway, when I saw James Alexander, right, he wants some ridiculous amount of money at that stage for... In my perspective, a 40-year-old design, a bunch of 40-year-old designs.
Indeed, yes. Right?
And on hindsight, and I said a large amount of money because I didn't have the money. I didn't have $1 million 25 years ago to just hand it over.
Oh, so amount was $1 million? Is that what they were chasing? Or more than?
More than $1 million.
Okay, right here.
And I'm not the only one that looked at it. Right. If you know John Riley from Axis Loudspeakers,
yes,
he looked at it as well.
Okay.
Anyway, I just left it, and 5 years later, I rang him, and he recognized my voice. I've only spoken to him twice.
Okay.
The last 5 years, but he recognized my voice, and he says, "Is that you, Kip?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "Oh, are you still interested in Dante?" I said, "Of course I am." He said, "Well, you better come over here with a checkbook."
March Audio. March Audio is a proud episode sponsor of the Not an Audiophile podcast. With a mission to provide superb technical performance and exceptional sound at modest prices, Alan March has designed a range of power amplifiers, a preamplifier, and a selection of stunning loudspeakers that you should check out now at marchaudio.com. And over here was to Adelaide, or where was over here?
To Adelaide.
Okay.
I flew from Sydney to Adelaide, right, the next day. And I just wrote him a check.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
There was a few legal issues we had. I don't know if you want to hear all this. There were a few legal issues. I suppose it's good gossip.
Well, we like a bit of gossip, right?
It's trivia, right? I don't know how many of your listeners was aware that the brand Dantec was under litigation from the Australian Tax Office.
Okay. Sorry, which tax office? Because the line's a bit scratchy. We should...
ATO, Australian Tax
Office.
Oh, yeah,
okay. Yeah, yeah, the ATO. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not, yeah, right. I was not some other, you know, not the US or something, no, from Australia.
No,
yeah.
No, Australia. And like they owe $3 million in backdated tax, you know?
Wow. Okay, that's quite a large sum.
That's quite a bunny, you know?
Was that sales tax or something, or what was that?
Sales tax, basically sales tax.
Yeah, okay.
What? Anyway, so, but by the time I went to meet James, it was quite a few years after the litigation started and has ended.
Oh, ended. Okay.
So I checked it with ASIC.
Yeah.
Litigation no longer valid, no longer existing. And I said, all right, okay, I'm not going to take over your company. I'm buying your brand here. And so what we did, we went to deregister Dantec Audio and in Adelaide, and I flew back to Sydney. I re-registered Dantec Audio.
Yeah, okay.
So although it's an iconic old brand, but it was a new entity.
That was that a stressful moment where, like, you
yeah, it was no, it wasn't a stressful moment because I was 25 years younger.
Well, there is that, right?
Right, you know, when you're young, you can take on the mountain.
Indeed,
it doesn't bother you. You sleep well.
Well, I mean, it's very true. I mean, like, it's like, you know, it's like racing drivers who make a comeback, you know, later in their mid-30s or something, and they never do any good because they
can't, because they're worried about it.
Yeah, they don't want to die. So,
yeah, but when they're 22, 23, man, they have no idea what dying means.
No, indeed. So, I understand that. So anyway, what was your next step? Because
the next step is I brought the brand back, and I told Brad about it, and he nearly fell off the chair.
I bet he did. Because you were still doing the Orpheus thing at that point.
I was doing Orpheus, correct. Yeah.
So you had a loudspeaker, a pretty successful and, you know, busy loudspeaker business, manufacturing business at that point.
Different time.
Yeah.
It's a different time. This way they want to know how cheap it is, what the margin is and things like that. You know, I mean, margins are still important, but, you know, they don't even listen to your speakers and they want to know the margin.
They want to know who wants to know the margin? What, the retailer or the...
The retailers.
Oh, I see, yeah, what you're offering at a retail margin. Yeah, actually, you're kind of right. I don't know what that was. I guess, was that an Australian thing that it was just, I could sell... Sell 10 pairs a week and I need to double my money or something, or
As soon as I hear that response, I sort of I lose interest.
Yeah.
You know? But being from a audiophile or budget audiophile, entry audiophile, loudspeaker design company, as soon as I hear a response like that, I lose interest and I sort of, oh, don't worry about it.
Indeed.
You know what I mean. You know?
Well, you had a lot of supportive dealers at that point. Yeah. You probably didn't need any more. But
we had retailers from the middle of nowhere. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like me. Hey, did you? You didn't really. You told Brad. Did you tell? I suppose you told a few other close confidants, but in the business.
What we did was we had a press release and. Australian Hi-Fi, what Greg Borman was shocked when he heard that.
I bet he was, yeah.
And we had, and there was a press release that was printed on the next issue of Australian Hi-Fi.
Yeah, okay. Shock, but excitement as much as shock, I would have thought. That
on the surface, everybody perceived that Dantec was dead in the water.
Yeah. It had been a while, yes.
That's right. But Dantec wasn't dead in the water. Right? Dantec was designing and working with a lot of mastering studios in Australia and overseas.
Okay.
Yeah. They did have some retail designs which John Dunleavy didn't design, which I had to, when I took it over, I don't know if I should say this. I spent a good few years putting up bushfires.
Well, you had to, I mean, you took on support of the product effectively, is that right?
I took on support of products.
Well, you kind of have to because you want to protect your brand, right?
Totally correct. I didn't have to, right?
But No, not legally.
Yeah, but I did, right? And one of it was there was a couple of models. I mean, John was a first order Butterworth design officer, right? And we still are, right? But in between, they were shifting. other designers came in that weren't first order people, you know. I mean, I still get people overseas that tells me, don't worry about the first order. It has to be first order. Or is this a Dante? Yeah. There are things in first order that other fourth order can never deliver.
What do you feel those are? Is that related to? I mean, I realize the Duntech philosophy is time related as much as first order and sealed box, obviously.
A sealed box and all that, but I think it is directly more related to phase coherence.
Yes. Okay. Yep.
When you listen to a first order phase coherent loudspeakers, you sit there and say, Jesus, I nearly swore there.
Well, you actually are allowed to swear. So what were you going to say?
Oh, okay, I'll swear, right? You listen to a first order pulse coherent loudspeakers, right? You sit down there, palm aligned, of course. You sit down there, the first thing that comes out of your mouth is, fuck me, dude.
Is that it? and that's because the music just hangs in space. Is that?
It hangs in space. The music is talking to you.
Yes.
The music is not playing back at you. It is talking to you, right? And how many times every listener say, "Jesus Christ, he is there."
Yes.
Right? And you have heard it before. Yeah.
Well, I've heard various Duntechs over the year. Over the years, traded a few models in various degrees of excitement. I did hear Sovereigns in a client's home and was very taken with the performance. It had a sense of scale you rarely get. But probably the most impressive, as far as hanging in space, is your little the original loudspeaker you rebuilt the brand with.
Well, that's a story that I'll get to that. Mm. Right?
But that certainly hung in space. It was a delight. Okay. Yeah.
The Sovereign has scale.
Yes.
Right? But I my opinion is that the best sounding vintage Duntech is the Princess the Crown Prince.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, even I was impressed. Right?
Yeah.
It has scale. Princess quite haven't got that scale, but it's amazing. Mm. Emotionally amazing. Right? And that's the phase, first order, time aligned design topology. Right? And when we designed the first the DSM-15 that you heard, right?
Yeah.
It did the same thing, and but the thing is that we struggled to sell that speaker.
Yeah, which is surprising because it demonstrates amazingly well. You know, as far as just creating music in the room.
But we struggled to sell it, and I decided, look, I need to find out why people are not responding. They like the sound,
yeah,
but they're not responding with their checkbooks, right?
Okay. Yep.
The result was that. This is exact words, everybody. When I think of Duntech, I'm looking for a big loudspeaker.
Ah, yeah. Now, actually, that's interesting because when I saw that was the first thing you did, I thought exactly the same thing. Hang on, you've gone off in a different direction, which you kind of hadn't because he'd made smaller speakers, Ryan.
He has, yeah. But you know what? His PCL-25 was selling exceedingly well.
Mm,
right? Yes. His PCL-25 is actually the Marquee.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a crossover, same drivers.
Yes.
Oh, no, different driver.
Well,
same crossovers.
Yeah. But same central part.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely, right? And various other, what you call it, there's a few other things. And a smaller one, which is the PCL. He has a few PCL-5, PCL, things like that.
Yes.
Which made a long time before Duntech actually became very famous.
Yeah.
Right? And I still get emails about people wanting a crossover, a schematic for a speaker that I didn't even know existed.
It's actually, I mean, it's a what you did, where you took over a historic and great brand with a profile, with quite a lot of product out there, and you sort of get this interesting insight into really what the business was really doing. Forget the publicity. You've taken this brand over. You now receive the emails. I mean, you must have received... I mean, the intel that you've gotten back over the years must allow you to create quite an interesting picture of how business actually was back in the day, I would imagine.
I get a lot of funny emails. Bear in mind, John Dunleavy is a little bit, how shall I put it? He's a genius that didn't, it's like Leonardo da Vinci.
Leonardo never answered his emails, so was John.
But you know what I mean.
Yes.
You know? They live in, he's living ahead of his time.
Well, he was to some degree, wasn't he? And I mean, he was clearly, when you say he was a genius, and I mean, I guess it's well documented, but I mean, he was doing some secret squirrel stuff for the military, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, of course. That's why he was here. Right?
To escape what? No, potentially. Being killed or something.
This is my opinion, although there's no confirmation. He was sent here. I am 100% sure he was sent here.
Okay.
An agreement between the Australian government and the US government, right?
Okay.
When he came to Australia, his first port of call was Canberra. What the fuck would somebody want to go to Canberra for?
Well, only politicians, obviously, and the people who work for them.
Or people who work for them, or in the spy defense industry.
Yeah,
right?
Indeed. Okay.
And he worked there for a little while. He actually started making Dante quite famous in Canberra. Right?
Okay.
The next port of call, Adelaide. Now, another statement from me. What the fuck would anybody want to go to Adelaide for? I'm not talking about now. I'm talking about in those days. Right. There's nothing there.
Well, there was always wine. Was he into wine,
Oh, yeah, of course. Don't get me wrong. My favorite wine is from South Australia, right? But you know what I'm talking about. Why would somebody like John Dunleavy go to Adelaide? Well, who he worked for? He worked for himself. But he was working in consultation with the Australian government, you know? And he was working in ballistics and things like that.
Okay.
Right? That must be something to do with military, right?
Well, he was designing some kind of underwater communication system for submarines or something is what the internet says. But I mean, clearly,
a lot more than that.
Yeah.
John Dunleavy is actually ex-US Army, NASA. Now, I don't know how true this is. I'm told it is 100% true. I'm told by James that has met John quite a lot, worked with him. And the story is that the landing on the moon, right? John had a fair bit of input in the design of the antenna.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I read that somewhere as well. Yes, right? Yeah.
A lot of the stuff at that stage is classified anyway, right? Even when I took over Dante, they were declassified, but a lot of it is hearsay and things like that. I was returned a manual, a very thick manual.
Yeah.
The Australian government actually rang me. Oh, we have a copy of... the antenna design, you still want it?
Is that right? What, stuff that he'd sent in for a patent or something?
Yeah, his presentation to the Australian...
Oh, to Australian government for something he was trying to sell them. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's right. There were 5 pages loudspeakers and 16,000 pages
on antennas?
On the antenna, right?
How many pages? 16,000?
A lot of pages.
Yeah, yeah.
The book about 2 inches thick.
Wow. Okay. Rightio. Yeah. Well, this is... Anyway. Before you hold that thought, Kiet, we'll have a quick break. This is an amazing story. We'll be back in a couple of seconds. Thanks, folks.
Sure.
Stereonet.com. Forums, classifieds, news and reviews, opinion pieces. Mark Rushton has built one hell of a website, stereonet.com. Take a look today.
All right, we're back with Kiet Lowe from Duntech, the well-known, originally Australian, well, it was always Australian loudspeaker brand. I guess I say that because John Dunleavy went back to America and started another speaker brand. But we were talking about when he first got here, he went to Canberra, secret squirrel stuff. You feel there was like a hangover of his military involvement, even though he was here, or even maybe that was the reason he was here.
That was the reason. Why would anybody from the US want to come to Australia?
Well, you do wonder that, don't you? And look, I remember thinking that at the time. I mean, maybe he liked kookaburras, lizards and snakes, and maybe the occasional shark attack. I mean, if he went to Adelaide, he certainly went to the right state for a good shark attack. I mean, they've got the best and biggest sharks. But I mean, if you need a good shark, you should go to South Australian waters. But of course, if you need a good wine and cheese, you go to the Adelaide Hills or the Barossa. So he wasn't completely silly. Yes. Yeah. Rolling back to the you secured the brand. The emails are coming in asking you for obviously spare parts or something for models that you didn't know existed.
We saw spare parts than we saw speakers.
Yeah. You were selling more spare parts.
Yeah.
And so what timeline did you... We mentioned the 15, the first model, but just generally looking at what your plans were. I mean, you rang up on a whim is the way you tell the story. So I guess you had 5 years to think about what you would do if you ever secured it. Did you have an outline of how you were going to proceed?
Certainly. I still want to design the speakers... using the what we call the prime directive,
yes,
right, and which we still do, and which we did, and we still do, right, and that would have been one of our biggest impediment, because a lot of drive units these days are not very first order friendly.
Well, they're not because of, you know, stiffer cone materials that I guess are more accurate and piston-like, but then they have these horrible breakup modes. So what?
Ridiculous.
Yep.
Now, bear in mind that the Duntech has to be first order, 6 dB per octave, right? Roll-off. And it rolls off a long way, right?
Mm.
And it has to behave. If it doesn't behave, a little bit, you can fix it. If it's a bad mic... But no way.
Well, you can't ever really fix it.
Well, there's some famous barbers. I don't know I can call them very good, but there are some very famous drivers, right? German drivers that we can't use. Their breakup is like. Phew.
Oh, the ones that you had in mind that in the past band were what you were looking for, you can't use because of your first order topology. How many octaves are you trying to maintain that? And we are talking about a 6 dB acoustic slope is what you obviously need to maintain. Yeah. So how many octaves do you try to achieve that for? Like two or three, I guess?
We actually, with our new Princess, which is almost finished, right?
Yeah.
Although everybody thinks it's finished, and we have sold a few pairs, mm-hmm. right? We maintained it all the way. Wow.
Okay.
All the way to 10K.
Okay, from the top of the mid-range you're talking about.
Before crossover. Yep. Way before crossover.
Oh, right? Okay.
Yeah. So some of the earlier designs not done by John, right? And yep. John maintains it, right? And I can tell because I reverse. I got old speakers that I measure, and I wanted to know how far John maintained. John really maintained it.
Okay.
My all the way, right? And for that reason, there are many, many drivers we couldn't use. And that's what's holding us back, right? And some people say, oh, why don't you design your own drivers? Right? Oh, design loudspeakers is bad enough. We're going to design drivers.
I think people underrate the complexities of that. Anyone who can, and people like Andrew Jones, who can conjure a driver and have it engineered for his purposes, makes him as well.
He's
a smart cookie.
Yeah, I know, but I know it's just like he's designing loudspeakers with a software. You know, there was a software that we used to use, and Brad and I will run it, and he says, "Oh well, shall we keep going?" And I said, "Yeah, let's see what the stupid thing does." I mean, it gave us beautiful response, right? Beautiful everything, and it requires capacitors like 5,000 micro.
Yeah, that's right. 50 Henry. It works beautifully in software, but not in the real world. So you wanted to use off the shelf, or at least drivers that could be lightly modified by the maker.
With slight modification.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Well, when we look at the driver, we say, "No, this is sort of working, but we need this and that." And In my opinion, this is with consultation to the driver manufacturer, and they said that's no problem, and so we will tell them what we require, and they will send us some samples where we test it, you know, and we said no, we still need a little bit more, you know, and they will send us more samples, and we said, yeah, that's it.
Perfect. Now this, of course, takes years, so you.
Certainly takes years because, they're not sitting there waiting for our response. You know, they're moving on with other manufacturing, other design, other loudspeakers, other loudspeaker companies.
Of course.
So we'll have to wait for them to be able to supply us with the test drivers.
So brief outline. So you're still working on the Princess, you said, is that right?
Yeah, our second model was the Senator.
Yeah, okay. Now the Senator, that's a sort of a three driver floor standard, is that
correct? Yeah, that's correct. Three driver floor standing, and we that's a speaker that people from US, Canada pay me. Sight unseen, sound unheard.
Oh, look, I was completely enthralled with the way they... I know you say they didn't sound as good as you would have liked in that room, but I was pretty damn impressed. The things that you alluded to earlier where... Well, I mentioned music hanging in space, but that was more about the 15s. But these did this as well, but there was incredible depth, detail. It was a really... Here's a good old word, scintillating performance. It really, they do something magical. And the thing is, they're not actually that expensive, are they? What's the current price of those a pair?
The retail price?
Sure. Well, we know the wholesale price is probably $1,500. But what's the what's the retail price?
$1,500.
That's all they cost to make. You say you can pay for a brand with the sale of $10,000 speakers. Yeah, everything's profit. Right. Now, they're about $35,000 or something, I think, aren't they, Kiet?
The recommended retail is about $35,000.
Yeah, okay, it is. All right. Yeah. Well, I knew they were $30,000 a few years ago, so I guess they would have gone up a bit. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got to bear in mind that cost of air freight. You know, 100 kilos for two speakers, right?
I mean, we toss that figure around like it's not a lot of money. It's a hell of a lot of money in some ways, but when you compare it with other very highly engineered loudspeakers in the marketplace, that is sharply priced. And I think delivers a very exciting performance. But we're not here to sell them; we're here to talk about them. Yeah, so you've got that model going as your second one. And then What? Obviously, you're working on all of the models, I guess, in parallel.
Yeah, even when we were designing the Senator, we already started working on our new Princess.
Yeah.
Right, I call the C5800. Right. And we made the first pair, which we sent overseas. We made a second pair, which we sold. Pre-production test, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we sold it to a customer in Australia, but he was over the moon. I mean, you know. Just now, I said that about the. I thought the best speaker was the best Dantec was the Crown Prince or the Princess or the Crown Prince.
Yes.
Right. This exceeded it.
Okay.
Exceeded it well over, right? And this customer was so happy with it, and he rang me a couple of weeks ago wanting to know if we have started making it. I said, "Oh well, I've been sick for 6 months, and I stopped working for 6 months."
Yeah, you were telling me the other day you got shingles. In your face. Now that is awful. And so you're more than
blind.
Yeah, that's diabolical. But you're over that is like
I'm over the shingles part, but I'm still a little it's actually improving with my what they call postherpetic neuralgia, which is the results of damaged nerves.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a lot of fun. Yeah. So you've had a hell of a time, but fortunately
it was very painful.
Oh, yeah.
It feels like somebody putting a blowtorch on you and slowly increase the gas, right?
The thing with that analogy is that even just having the blowtorch with the gas turned down is going to be quite painful. But then it gets worse because you're increasing the gas.
I could feel the skin peeling off.
Oh, crikey. All right. Let's.
And I used to scream in pain, right?
Oh, God. Okay.
And that was for the first 2 months, you know, and things started getting better. And I still get a little bit now, but I can put up with it. And because of that, I'm back working again on the speakers.
Well, we're all happy to hear that because that's awful. I mean, I can't even imagine it. It's a much under regarded as being a nasty thing, shingles. It's super unpleasant, and getting it in the head is anywhere is super dangerous for all sorts of hearing and eyesight.
Your ear.
Yeah. But you avoided any permanent damage to your hearing and eyesight, yes.
I have a cousin which is a retired GP, and I told him about I have a funny habit of sending pictures to GPs and friends of my illness. What?
Well, you think it's funny.
Well, I did. Even the GP thought it was funny. What? I mean, sometimes when it was funny, this case wasn't funny. I'll tell you the funniest ones. I'm a very blunt person.
What?
And I'm a very blunt person. I call a spade a spade.
Indeed you do.
Right? And I have no hesitation. I have no hesitation in admitting to a mistake and let's see how we can fix it, right? Instead of sitting in the sideways feeling sorry for yourself, of course, I still feel sorry for myself, you know. But I'm always up to looking at how to resolve the problem.
Indeed.
See, my background is that I'm an architect, right?
Yes.
And in the designer's mind, the designer is always about resolving problems.
Yes, yeah.
And I apply the same mentality to loudspeaker designs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's an issue. How do we fix it? Well, everything is fixable. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, The funny one is that one day I had a case of hemorrhoids. Now, how do I fix that?
Well, the first thing you do is send a photo, apparently.
I absolutely did. Right? I put my phone down there, took a picture. Right? And I said, gee, that looks terrible.
Yeah. I bet it does.
And I said to, I went to the doctor and I showed him that. First time I had a doctor real on the floor laughing, you know. He was on the ground laughing. He said, oh, this is so funny, you know. And this must be from my association with Bradshaw.
It could be something to do with it.
That's something that he would have done too.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, we should. To me.
I guess.
Don't worry. It's not bowel cancer.
Well, that. Indeed. Oh, dear. Okay, I'm getting better. I think we were talking about loudspeakers.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah. But this is all, look, loudspeakers, one thing, the people's personality behind it is the other.
Well, we'll just get the comedic stories over and done with, because there's one you reminded me of the other day, which I reckon you've told me before, because you were in business with Brad Serhan for some years, and
many years.
The story that you tell, actually, I think was before you knew him, so I guess Brad must have told you the story, but the one where Brad enters the Chinese restaurant for an important meeting with a potential...
with a potential Malaysian distributor.
Yes.
And Brad is the absent-minded professor, right?
Yeah.
The night before, do you want me to repeat the story?
I think you should.
Well, the night before he went to bed, he was getting into bed, so he took off his clothes, and instead of taking his trousers off, taking his undies off, he put his hand on the side and removed both at the same time, you see?
Saves time.
And he left it on the chair.
Yeah.
And the next morning, he was a bit late for the meeting, knowing Brad.
What? Right? That's unusual.
Anyway, come on, you know that. Anyway, so instead of putting a new underwear on, right? No, he did. He did put a new underwear, but he's forgotten the other underwear was still in there, right?
Sitting on top of his pants, yeah.
Sitting inside his pants, right? And it was all right until he got to the restaurant. And as he was walking in, the distributor was sitting at the table there waiting for him for lunch. And he had a waiter following him. And as he was just about to sit down, the waiter sort of squatted over and picked up an underwear. He said, excuse me, sir, is this yours? It's fallen out of one leg of trousers.
Out of the bottom of the leg. And so he picked it up with a chopstick.
And he put it into his pocket, and the Malaysian distributor cackled away laughing. And we still talk about it.
The bit that I found amusing last time you told me was the bit where the waiter was coming after him with his jocks hanging off the end of a chopstick. Are these yours, sir?
Are these yours, sir? He looked at it. He looked at his trousers, and he, without answering, he picked it up, put it into his pocket.
Yeah, you must have had some interesting times. Hey, we're going to take a quick break, Kiet, and we will be right back with actual loudspeakers and hear where you're up to today with the Duntech range. Back in a sec with Kiet Lowe. Find the sound of your life by crafting a quality stereo system with the Hi-Fi Shop. Featuring all the brands you know and love. Riga turntables, Bowers & Wilkins loudspeakers, Exposure Electronics, amplifiers and CD players from the UK, and of course Sonos Faba loudspeakers from Italy. The Hi-Fi Shop helps you create your sound. Visit the team at hifishop.com.au. And we are back with Kiet Lowe on the line. The sound quality from Kiet's phone is mediocre, but understandable. We apologise for that. It's how he likes to talk. Probably something to do with that 6 months worth of hell you've been through. We won't talk about it anymore, or any of your other medical photos. But you're feeling pretty good. So you've been. I mean, I think to put some texture on this, you gained control of the brand a long time ago. I guess it's more than, well, you said 25 years, but I feel like it's more than that. Was it not?
It's a bit over 25.
Bit over, yeah, okay. So around the turn of the century, dear, yeah. Makes it sound.
And the reason I did that,
yeah,
is because I enjoyed Duntech and I adored the brand, right?
Yeah.
And it was going to go down. I decided to make the commitment to save the brand.
Yes.
But I needed to know that we can design speakers along that, which we knew anyway, right?
Yeah. So you, the aforementioned sovereigns that appeared in the TV segment that kind of put the brand on the world stage back in the 80s, mm-hmm. That model, a new version of that, is this something that's happening, or what? Where is the sovereign
I like to think so, but having said that, the design is in my mind.
Yeah.
Right? I roughly know the driver I'm going to use.
Well, we're talking for the bass driver, I presume, because the mid-range drivers and tweeters are in the bag, effectively.
Yeah, no, everything, yep. Right? And I want to know how the thing will look visually, because it has to look as good as it sounds.
Well, can I say something on that and butt in? The people who have been listening for an hour already, if you haven't gone and looked at the Duntech website and looked at the models that you have completed, the redesigned ones, they are some of the best looking loudspeakers on the planet, which might sound a bit of a bold statement, but that is particularly the bigger one, which, what is the model of the third one that you did?
Our new Princess.
Your Princess. Man, what a cool-looking thing that is. So getting back to, sorry, just people should go to, and what's the website? Duntech.com. .com, easy as that. So back to the Sovereign. So you've got it in your mind. You know how you want it to look.
Correct. And but bear in mind, I'm 74.
You don't sound it. You sound more sort of early 80s, but it's you know, that's there is a delay on the line. That is a problem. I don't want to go sideways about age, but I mean, is it your brain is sharp as a tack, obviously. So what's the limitation? Just your endurance through the day, I guess. Is that the thing?
Absolutely correct. Yeah, I used to be able to just push the Princess around by myself.
Yes. You want to really at some point take it easy, right? Stop carrying around heavy speakers and trying to work out how to make them work.
Because I took it over when I was before I became 50.
I was going to say, you were in your 40s. I mean, that throws it throws a light on a couple of things. It's amazing how quickly you become in your 40s to now I'm 74. It's kind of scary, but yeah.
So I have had offers, but that was offers. I'm actually looking for somebody that can take over.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, but it has to be an entity. It can't be. It has to be an entity. People with motive. Ideally, it'd be an entity that already own certain brands that want to add on to add another iconic brand onto it.
Yes.
And increase its prominence.
Yeah. Yeah. move it forward.
You can make anything besides a microwave oven, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's limitless.
Yeah, I don't think finding a buyer should really be a problem. I mean, you've got probably 90% of the hard work is done. You've got a great brand that's well regarded and well known, and then you've got a bunch of fantastic models. And what you and I both know, and not so much the casual listener, is just the amount of drawings and details and stuff, that the work that you've gone to get those three new models happening. I mean, can you put a amount of hours that you've spent? I mean, we know it's taken 25 years.
I'll tell you what. I have spent over $1 million to keep the thing going.
Well, there's that as well, of course. It's just... We don't want to talk about that. But what about the man hours? But yes, you see.
The man hours is whenever I'm not asleep, I'm thinking of Dante.
Yeah, for the last 25 years.
Correct.
Yeah, I don't know how many hours that is. I've got a calculator in front of me. It's a hell of a lot.
Yeah, my mind is always on Dante. Not what I can get out of it, but what I have asked myself that question, why did I take it over?
You're constantly asking yourself why and cursing.
Not in regret.
No.
But to remind me why I took it over.
Yeah, to keep yourself focused. Yes.
Yeah. And because I love the brand.
Yeah.
It is an important brand. It is a brand that has history.
Well, on that front, okay, I'll say a couple of things. It has history like almost no other Australian loudspeaker brand, and it's got a bit of a pedigree. And you know what else it's got? And that's down to you. It's just the most stunning industrial design of any Australian loudspeaker. And, of course, when I say Australian, I'm saying that, you know, really many, probably some of the best industrial design of loudspeakers made anywhere in the world. But the care and the detailed nature of that design and the way you've had the cabinets made, and I know that's been a trial in itself over the years to get someone to make something to your exacting standards. When you see them in the flesh, they are perfect.
Absolutely correct.
Very, very hard to achieve.
I agree with that.
As you should. Now, a job incredibly well done, Kia. I remain just stunned and impressed with the quality of the workmanship and the wonder of the sound. And I hope that you can find someone the right entity, as you say, that has the skills to take it on.
It can't be a person because...
You need more time than one person can put into it.
Exactly. Absolutely correct.
Yeah.
The brand, Dante, half your battle is down, is over.
Yeah, well, that's right. And that's the bit that, I mean, we could go on and on about it, but for those that have tried, you know, I speak from first-hand experience, you know, having your brand accepted is a long-term battle, struggle, basically.
Absolutely, especially on the international stage.
Peter Como said to us in a previous episode, which we'll notate on the... I'll put a link to on the webpage for this episode, exactly that. He laughed when I suggested that IAG could start another brand. He just laughed. He's like, well, only a crazy man would start a new brand. It's just he considered it to be virtually impossible.
And, I agree. Totally, I agree.
Yeah. So, I think we've covered it, Kiet. I'm so impressed. Thank you so much for coming on the show. You've unearthed some stories that people, I'm sure, have not heard, and given us a real insight into how you've, the huge task, and of course you've done incredibly well to get three models completed, and they are stunning, as I've mentioned. But like I say, we're not here to sell the product. But actually, as it turns out, the newsflash is we're here to sell the brand, as it turns out. I didn't realise. So thank you, Kiet Lowe. Duntech, the famous loudspeaker brand that he has rebuilt from a place where it was sitting on the shelf to some degree, back to a force sending loudspeakers all around the world. Thanks again for your time, Kia.
Thank you.
A pleasure.
soundstageaustralia.com, part of the Soundstage Global Network. Hi-fi news, hi-fi reviews. Edgar Kramer is the editor of Soundstage Australia, and he writes a particularly detailed, careful, insightful review on high-quality audio products. Take a look today, soundstageaustralia.com.